Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to today's Tuesday podcast here at Cyclone Fanatic. Of course, brought to you by our good friends at Agrigold. They know corn. No CFTV live this week. We're actually making improvements to the product. We had some technical difficulties last week. We're getting all that cleaned up, and the goal is that next Tuesday when you tune in to CFTV live, it'll be much better product for you to see aesthetically. So stay tuned for that. We look forward to that. We figured a bye week was the good time to make these adjustments. Jeff Woody joins me here on the Tuesday Agrigold podcast here at Cyclone Fanatic. Woodman, what's up?
Nothing much, man. My goal, I think, with the CFTV stuff is I'm going to be John Madden next week.
Yes. Can you be more like Gruden, though? Because I like Gruden.
I tell you what, man. That's pretty good.
Man.
Pretty good.
I just did my Steve Prohm.
It's a totally different person. Yeah. That's not even a similar accent.
My Steve Prohm leaks into everything, unfortunately. I love Prohm, though.
Just trying to be a British guy all of a sudden. Turns yeah. Man.
Who's your so, analyst-wise, because I know you like, you're like me. You're kind of an analyst junkie. Mm-hmm. You know who's really great?
Who?
Les Miles.
I haven't watched enough Les Miles games.
He did Nebraska, Northern Illinois on Saturday. And I DVR like 10 games every Saturday. It's my life. And I just got around to watching that on like Sunday night. It's phenomenal. He reminds me of Gruden.
You know who is
very raw?
Who's my favorite? And I don't know why. It's just like the whole Joe Buck thing. Why people hate Joe Buck. I don't get it.
I don't get it
either. He's really good. But color guy, that's my kind of my niche. The color guy who's, for those that aren't sure, the play-by-play is, that's, you know, it's first and 10 and it's pass to Montgomery. Like that's the color guy or the play-by-play. The color guy is, hey, great job by Park by sliding here, doing this. The two color guys that I really like are Chris Collinsworth. And I have
Collinsworth's great.
No idea why people hate him. And I think people I think the reason why people hate Collinsworth is that people say he sounds preachy. And I think it's because he's so good at his job that he's informing you on things that you didn't think
he's
knew
great.
That you thought you knew.
I don't get why people wouldn't like him.
No, I love Collinsworth. And the other guy, Tony Romo. Man, good.
I haven't heard him yet.
He is good. And it's funny because he's got like the anticipation and in like the thing you want to do with a color commentation is timing is huge where you don't want to I'll throw Heft under the bus for just like 2 seconds. I really do like Eric Heft, but remember when, so like the John Walters call of me going in the end zone
and we're
going to a bowl game.
Yeah, like, I'll never forget
like,
that call.
Don't say that. Like that was like Walters had such a great call of that and then just let the moment sit. And then there are times when you need to say something because something's confusing. So like timing's hard to figure out. Romo does it already really well. You need to be insightful, like actually bring something to the, don't just say like Sergio Dip or whatever his name is of he's having the time of his life. Like not that. And then also like having something that is insightful and do something the way this is what I try and do here is say something that a coach wouldn't know in a way your grandmother would understand. So that's the way that a lot of that's the phrase that someone used to describe what a good color guy does or a good analyst does. So that's what I try and do here. So my two guys are Romo and Collinsworth. I love those guys.
I think you'll like less. It's much less of a X's and O's deal, and it's more of like a Grandpa Les.
Aww.
Which I like. I think
that's
got to
be better.
That's
Ryan.
That's why I love Gruden though, because Gruden like.
He gets so excited all the time, which is good considering the Monday night slate is always crap.
It's just garbage.
Where it's the Jets versus the
hot garbage.
Jets versus the San Diego Chargers.
Hot garbage.
Fun.
Ugh. Hey, look, okay, we don't have a lot of time today because you got to go coach CrossFit. So let's dig right into Iowa State's 41-2. And by the way, I'm going to come back next week.
Good. You don't look bad. I would say. That's a good thing, but you don't look bad. I don't know if it's in the slimming shirt.
I've been eating less.
It's good.
Because I haven't been able to work out at all. So
it's good.
But I've been drinking more and eating less.
Fun fact is...
A lot of that Templeton ride.
It's like 80% of your being able to lose weight is just eating less food.
Yeah, you tell me that all the time.
Yeah, it's not... You can work out as much as you want, but if you eat more than you work out, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can still gain weight.
When I first started working out at Whitford's CrossFit, I was burning so many calories because I wasn't used to lifting that much that I wanted to eat everything in sight.
Mm-hmm. And then you end up like if you burn 5,000 calories and eat 6,000, you still it's the same difference. It's 1,000 calories extra where you eat. If you burn 2,000, eat 3,000. It's the same 1,000.
It's just you're a little stronger.
You're a little stronger. You're just still gaining
weight. You're still fat. Story of my life. Okay. 41-14, Iowa State defeats Akron.
It's about time that Iowa State treats a MAC school like they should.
Like a little punk that they are.
It's not a little punk. They're still a decent program.
Decent. They're the Zips.
They're the Zips. What did Brent say Zip came from?
Like some garbage take, like a tire, Goodyear. He was proven incorrect by a caller moments later. Bloom, fake news, Brent Bloom on the Cyclone Fanatic radio show. Yeah, it's something to do with Goodyear. Okay, real quick. So you like analogies.
I do.
This is what Iowa State football reminds me of right now. A 20 to 25-year-old male.
Okay.
Where you a lot of talent. The work ethic is absolutely there. You mean well.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't had enough reps in life to really understand what it takes to reach your full potential. You work you don't pay attention to detail. 75% of the task you're trying to accomplish, you're doing an awesome job with, but it's finishing out that 25% that could use a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
They remind me of myself at 22 years old when I had my first job down doing radio in Southwest Iowa, where my boss called me in and said, "Hey, listen, you need to start under promising and over delivering," that type of a conversation. Mm-hmm. And what I watch with Iowa State, it's just like I truly don't think I've ever watched an Iowa State team that I've covered where I'm like, man, there's so much potential there.
Mm-hmm.
2005 team, we knew how good they were, but we also knew, okay, these guys are mostly seniors. Next year's going to be rough.
That's not the case here.
Yeah, like when I watch this team, I'm like, man, these guys for the most part are pups.
And they're already better than they were last year and better than previous senior-laden teams.
So I do think that, like, Campbell's a really good CEO. He's more of a CEO than he is anything, and he's a great motivator behind the scenes. And, man, Jeff, I've never been more excited about Iowa State football in my entire life, ever.
I'm in the same place. And the thing about it, and I really like that metaphor, too, because there's another kind of different type of metaphor is a guy, say you're in a fight and it's the guy who's bigger, stronger, and faster than someone else who's going to win a whole bunch of fights. Say a UFC fighter, he's a guy, he's bigger, stronger, faster, has decent technique, just doesn't know exactly when to place things. And so against inferior opponents, which they played in week 1 and week 3, which before Iowa State wasn't able to do this. They weren't able to close out and just beat the hell out of bad teams. They were in this fighting metaphor, they're able to just beat the hell out of somebody they're bigger, stronger, and faster than, which is a great thing to finally be able to do. And in this same metaphor, this fighter is learning fight by fight. Maybe I shouldn't come in with this. Maybe I should take a little more pacing
here.
Maybe I should do this here. And so the next fight, they're more prepared, and they can take that same athleticism and talent into the next fight with them. And so what this Iowa State team has, and I think probably my favorite part of Saturday outside of the game itself, which even maybe including the game itself, I love this quote, is when Jacob Park does his interview. And at the end of the interview, sometime during the interview, he goes, "We ain't happy with that." And, you know, dip in mouth and all South Carolina twang that he has.
I loved that, by the way.
But he said, "We ain't happy with that." They won by 21 points, or more than 21, four touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first quotes out of the quarterback's mouth is, "That wasn't good enough."
Yeah.
That is exactly what needs to happen when you beat a MAC team on the road.
The head
and the head coach said
the same thing. Yeah.
And so that's kind of culture-wide, is that when you chase perfection, you're going to end up with greatness. And if you don't have that idea, then you're going to just be okay for a long time. And Iowa State finally, like we were talking about, is learning how to do the things the right way. And if you go spot by spot across this, like you were talking about, Jacob Park's a junior, David Montgomery's a sophomore, or from center to right guard is sophomore, sophomore, sophomore. Foster.
You lose Lazard, but there's so much behind him.
You lose Lazard and Campos.
And Joel's a big culture guy.
Right, but that culture's already been established now.
Yeah.
And so, and you look in the secondary, or look on defense, you lose J.D. Wagner, you lose Joel Lanning, and you lose Kamari Cotton-Moya. Pretty much everybody else is back, right?
Yeah.
And so they're good now, and they're getting better, and they're going to have more time to continue getting good. And that's the thing that's exciting, is that I would feel more, and I don't want to, I'm going to knock on wood somewhere, is I'm not saying this in a jinxing fashion, but they're understanding how to improve, and teams that, like I said, if you don't understand how to improve and you're just happy with okay performances that get you wins, yeah. then you're going to settle and learn that okay is good enough. And that, well, against, you know, when we were in school, or when I was in school, Baylor or Texas comes around,
yeah.
or an Oklahoma comes around, and your okay is not nearly as good as their good, as their okay. And so you're going to need to elevate yourself past that point. So I think that was the biggest part on Saturday, is that they slogged through the first quarter, first half, and then turned it back on and ended up pulling away a long ways at the end. But after the game, the head coach and the quarterback, the two basically mouthpieces of that team, are going to say, not good enough. We won, but it's not good enough. And that was really, really nice to see.
Park continues to make throws that we've just missed
yep.
in the past. And it's just, you know, the over-the-shoulder to Lazard in the corner of the end zone, that's an overthrow the last few years. Park just is making the throws.
In the Iowa game, how many times have we seen a quarterback launch a ball 7 yards too far to Hakeem Butler running yeah. naked down the middle of the field?
Yeah.
How many times has that ball gone 4 yards too long mm-hmm. and gone, oh, at yeah. Jack Trice? And finally it connects.
Yeah.
And so I think you can look at a lot of different things in the offense, and from a perspective of what are they doing better this year than they did last year is, yeah, David Montgomery's a monster. But between Montgomery and Warren last year, they were really good. So they're a lot better this year, but that's to be – I mean, a good running back doesn't make a great offense. The offensive line is demonstrably better, but by the end of towards the end of last year, the offensive line was playing okay. They're a lot better – again, they're a lot better this year, but it's not a demonstrable difference. A good offensive line – look at Iowa last year. They were still 117th in the nation with a really good offensive line. The wide receiver play was good last year, good again this year. What has made this offense score 40 in back-to-back-to-back games for the first time since, what, 76. 40 points in back-to-back-to-back games.
Correct.
And they put up 500 yards of offense on the road. Again, you're not playing Alabama. You're not playing
yeah,
whatever.
But that's a game that I've seen Iowa State lose.
Exactly. Last time we played a MAC school, granted, Toledo was a lot better than this Akron team, but still,
think about those Kent State games and the Chiswick years. I mean, there's a lot of games that Iowa State's lost to MAC schools.
And even North Dakota State a couple years ago at home.
Yeah.
But the biggest difference with this offense is that the quarterback is finally able to make throws and deliver the ball to skill position players without missing. And not necessarily without missing ever, because no one's perfect, but he had 9 incompletions on Saturday. Jacob Park had maybe 9 incompletions on Saturday. Probably 5 of those were drops. So
listen to this stat. He's 66.7% completion percentage this year. And Jay Jordan, I don't know if you've been reading Jay's columns. Mm-hmm. They're phenomenal. He has this down for 15 drops this year.
15 drops.
If you catch half of those, he's over 70% completion.
And that's
percentage.
Baker Mayfield territory.
Yeah, right there.
I think Baker, at 70.7 or 71.7 last year, set the single season completion percentage record with over X attempts. I think it's 500. Over 500 attempts or 100, whatever the number is. And Jacob Park is on that plane. Because of all the skill position guys around him, that ability to just have faith in the guys and be able to accurately deliver a ball has made this offense go. And because of that ability, teams are having to play out of the box, because last year, early in the year. So Joel Lanning was playing great. Like, think of the yeah. Baylor game. He was playing fantastic. But they could still play a heavy box, a 7-man box to a 7-man front. They were able to play up because they knew it's predominantly going to be either a run play, quick game, or it's going to be a bomb because Joel has a big arm. They knew that was going to be the case. There is no area of the field now that is safe. None. Because you've got Butler, you've got Ryan, you've got Lazard that are going to take the ball down the field. You've got Deshaunte Jones, you've got, again, Ryan, you've got Chase Allen, you've got David Montgomery, who are going to catch the ball somewhere in the middle. And you've also got Montgomery and Warren in the backfield to be able to run the ball in the tackles. There is no safe area of the field. It's like watching Baylor. Again, people are going to scream that I'm saying it's like watching a Baylor offense. It's clearly not the same.
You're saying they're using the whole field.
They're using the whole field, and they're able to access the whole field because of Park being able to accurately deliver balls to the deep corners, deep outs. Those back shoulder throws to Allen, those back shoulder throws to Hakeem, those are dirty throws, indefensible throws. And being able to deliver those balls has allowed Montgomery lighter boxes to be able to run against. And you give that guy one-on-one, I'm going to take David Montgomery every time in a one-on-one against almost anybody.
Hey, why does Lazard drop so many passes?
I think it's a focus thing.
Is it?
Yeah, I think because, I mean, physically he's able to catch everything.
Well, because he makes, like, freakish catches.
Right.
And then he drops easy ones.
I think it's this – it's he wants to make a good play out of a bad play, and he's not necessarily looking upfield before the ball is caught, but I think that's a little bit of it. And so it's just being able to drive – follow the ball into your hands every single time with your eyes. I'm not the best pass catcher in the world. I think I had 3 drops out of like 9 attempts, but being able to follow the ball all the way into your hands and then make the play after that. And I think he just tries to do too much with, so say he's catching, running a hitch. He wants to turn, or he wants to turn up before the ball gets there. And that's going to be removing your eyes from the ball. I think it's just a focus thing, which is a correctable mistake, which is good, but just needs to be doing the correcting. And granted, we're talking about a couple drops are they're his biggest problem, and they're probably the offense's biggest problem.
Yeah,
which is great.
I think so. Well, I mean, we can have a conversation about run blocking if you want,
but it's a different scheme. So I think the run blocking is actually not as bad as what people are probably
okay,
assuming.
Well,
for
let's talk about this, because
sure.
I, you know, when I watch this and I look at the stat differential between what Warren's getting on the ground and what Montgomery's getting on the mm-hmm. ground, I think Warren's at 3.2 or 3.3 yards per carry. Montgomery's at like 5.7. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me, Jeff, that when Montgomery's out there, he's getting these yards primarily on his own. I don't see a lot of second level blocking by this offensive line.
I think that's because the scheme is set up for that. Because they're not Iowa State's personnel is not set up to be a downhill blocking team. Julian Good-Jones is playing center, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Julian
yep.
Good-Jones was a tackle last year.
Yeah.
The guard center guard is meant to be like bowling ball, wooden stump, bowling ball. Like, they're meant to be really
yeah.
thick, strong pushers. Iowa State doesn't really have those three guys. They've got guys that are really assignment sound, technically sound, and they're big and strong. It's just they don't have that downhill. Like that Ogie that was what was supposed to be,
yeah,
what, 6'4", 6'5", 330? That's a guard. That's a guy you're pushing downhill. Robbie Garcia at 6'3", 295 is not a pusher. He's going to be able to move laterally really well. He's really athletic for his size. He's really smart. He's technically sound. But you're not going to be able to push a defensive tackle just out of the way. Like whatever the Texas dude's Texas defensive tackle, whatever, Puna Meyer or Puna something.
Yeah, I know.
You're not going to be able to push him out of the way with those three guys. You're just not. And so – but – what they do have is a lot of technically sound athletes. Like Jake Campos moves laterally as well as any run blocking tackle in the Big 12. And that's the thing that they do, is they don't try and run straight down the gut, which is where most of your untouched yards, which you can get an average running back 5 yards a carry, is you just move people out of the way, let a running back get contact at 3 yards and drag someone for 2.
Okay,
that was me. I was an average running back.
Follow up here.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of fans are probably thinking this right now. Why do you continue to try the delayed runs in the middle? Because it's not working.
Just not like game situations, like you're talking about draws.
Yeah, I mean just anything. It just like I know what you're saying about the lateral stuff, and mm-hmm. that stuff seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
Really, anything in the middle. The only time Iowa State's getting yardage if it's an individual effort by David Montgomery.
Even if it doesn't work,
you just got to keep him
the
honest.
Fact that you keep trying is
yeah.
there. Because
yeah.
it keeps
it.
Linebackers' first reads are not in the backfield. So they're not going to look at where the running back is going, where the quarterback's doing, looking at what the line is doing.
Yeah.
And so if you only ever take your guards outside, you see a linebacker to automatically trigger 1/16th of a second faster outside. All of a sudden, because you don't ever hold them in, you don't ever run zone block inside to force them to have reads both ways, then they're just going to key on everything outside. They're going to see a guard move and instantly assume that if they see – say a backside right, one of the plays that they run a lot is this kind of, it's a power sweep where
yeah.
the backside guard will pull and lead all the way outside the other tackle. And then the running back follows that guard. It's a power scheme. Everybody on the left side blocks down. That guard will pull and play the defensive end or linebacker. And if you only ever run outside, then instead of that linebacker fitting down into where your down blocks want to go, which is, say, the linebacker, as the offense looks at it, the left inside linebacker,
mm-hmm.
instead of that guy fitting down, because that with when they're looking at it, guard, center, guard, if you see down, down, pull, you're thinking power. You're thinking downhill. And so if you only ever run that play, that combination of down, down, pull with outside runs, then he's not going to fit inside. He's going to fit outside. A linebacker is faster than a guard. Linebacker is going to beat him to the spot every time. Montgomery has to wait for a guard to get there, somehow try and make an inside cut, and then it's just a pile of crap. So being, even if it's not successful, to run inside plays keeps linebackers honest, keeps linebackers, defensive linemen honest to say, they say down, down, pull, or whatever other blocking combination. If you see that that line is doing something that an interior run, then they can't automatically trigger outside. So even though it may not be working, it's still worth it to kind of punch a, you know, kind of gut punch every once in a while of, yeah, it might be 2 yards. Ideally, you want to get 5 yards of play, but
it worked a little bit against Akron, but I know Akron's D-line is not you're going to see next week against
it's
Texas.
Puna Myers, right? His last name is Myers?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Puna. I know it's his first
stud.
Name. He's a big – he's going to be a first-round NFL draft pick. That's what you're facing at tackle. And but being able to get angles on that guy – the interior run plays aren't going to produce a lot of fruit, but they're still going to be – it's a body blow in boxing. It's going to be something that keeps them from just defending the face. You know what I mean? Of – if you continually just jab, 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 all of a sudden, when you do come with a hook, oh, shoot, my hands were down. And so you're able to catch them off guard and give Montgomery space. Like I said, ideally, you want to mm-hmm. you want to execute that play. I mean, I'm not saying you're not.
No,
every time they run that call, they're going to be frustrated with 2 yards because I'm an offensive guy. Every offensive play is designed to score a touchdown. It is. You bank one guy, like you don't block one guy, hope the running back makes a miss, and every play is supposed to score a touchdown. So they're pissed when you don't get 10 yards on a power play. But in the same light, even if you get two or one or three and it's not a touchdown, that play is still worth running because it sets up everything else. It is the body blow to the rest of boxing.
The real silver lining for me, two things. One, the fact that we're so nitpicky about a 41-14 win is a positive.
Yep.
Two, the fact that I can sit here and bitch about run blocking all I want, but the fact of the matter is Iowa State actually has a running back who is capable of making some dudes miss and doing some things on his own. That's a real positive.
It's absolutely a
That's
positive.
That's a real positive.
And I can talk about – I mean, the funny thing about like David Montgomery is I could talk about how good he is, but it's so much easier on film for you guys to just see it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing that – like he's technically really good, but he can improve on his technique and setting up blocks and making himself get himself some space that he's not having to make all these moves. But when you're that good, it doesn't matter. Like you can make – you can give yourself a one-on-one with a linebacker, truck his ass, and then move on to the safety, make him miss.
Yeah.
There's, when you have that kind of talent, I can say, man, this guy's really good, but it's so much visual. It's so much better visually to just see him do what he does. He's an unbelievable talent, and I'm just really excited because, like I said, there's still things that he needs to improve on of giving himself less contact to take so he can have better contact to take. So setting up and trusting blocking at a certain time, and the line needs to just getting in sync with where your pullers are going to be and what your down blocks are going to look like. So he can, instead of taking contact at 2 yards, he takes contact at five. And if he's taking contact at 5 yards, then that contact is probably a safety, and take Montgomery on a safety, then those 4, 8, 9, 10 yard runs that he makes four guys miss tackles, he makes two guys miss tackles, they turn to 50 yard runs. So he's really good. There's still room for improvement, but he is a phenomenal running back.
Good stuff here. Love talking football with Jeff Woody. Let's go to the defensive side. Another very pedestrian football take here, okay? I watched the UNI game three times. I've watched the Iowa game twice, and I've watched the Akron game twice. In my general feedback, when I watch Iowa State's defense, if I'm trying to be critical, they look much better when they're being aggressive.
Yep.
It's when they start to sit back, and that's why I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but Iowa State's one of the worst third down defensive teams in the country right now. And I'm thinking that's when they're, you know, when it's third and 12, they quit being aggressive, and that's when these teams are able to pick them apart. Am I onto something?
You are onto something, and I think it's because, and this is, and I'm not going to talk smack, but Joel is not quite a ready-made product. And so
he's pretty damn good for the fact that he's only played three games.
No, exactly.
But I get where you're going here, yeah.
And so, yes, he is, it is mind-blowing that he's as good as he is now. But he's still a B-ish linebacker.
Yeah.
to be the fact, to be a B minus after never doing it since eighth grade.
You're in the Big 12 and you haven't played the position.
That's unbelievable where he's come from. But looking at it at a static state, not looking at where he's progressed from and to, he's still an average linebacker. And that's what Iowa did to Iowa went after Joel. And because Iowa's offense prevents you from really run blitzing, that's why they were able to get so many different one-on-one opportunities with Wadley and Joel. Wadley wins that against 99.9% of defenders, and Joel still didn't have quite – doesn't quite understand, because he's not done it enough, of just getting where he needs to fit, how he needs to stay out of certain traffic and put himself in certain traffic. He's still figuring that out. So there's not a ton of faith in the linebacking core as of yet. They will, because from game one to game three, Joel is demonstrably better than when he started. So he's going to continue to improve. But again, looking at it static state, they have a lot of – Haycock has a lot of confidence in his secondary, even without Kamari. A couple times they got beat. They should have been touchdowns. They would be touchdowns against somebody other than Akron.
Yeah.
So the one-on-one's not necessarily perfect. But the secondary, when you look one through seven of the guys that play, they're all Big 12 players. There is no – what is he doing out there? There's none of that. And when you look from Kamari and Peavy all the way down to Thad Daniels, you look all the way through those, that group, that's a Big 12 unit. What's weird, and this sounds, I wrote this in the for the Register, Iowa State has defensive linemen that are issues. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah,
with Camilo Tongamoa.
It's been a really long time since we've been able to say that.
With Lima and Tongamoa, when you watch those two guys in the middle, they are absolutely crushing.
Tongamoa might be playing 10 plays, but when he's out there,
man,
even against Iowa, did you notice, Jeff, when they brought him, he only played like 7 plays or something against Iowa, but they brought him into the
third. Caved in one side.
Yeah.
Just caved in one side. That dude is a monster of a human being.
We're on the same page here, because that's where I think I'm most optimistic about the future of this football program, the immediate future.
Yep.
I'm not talking years, I'm talking games, because Vernell Trent and Ray Lima have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think am I overstating it here? I think the strength of Iowa State's defense is its interior defensive line.
It's no longer a weakness. I think the strength is still with Kamari safe, or Kamari healthy, the safety play is really good. With Kamari healthy. Without Kamari, then I would say it moves out or moves in to defensive tackles. Without
After
Kamari.
That, the interior defensive
interior
line?
Interior defensive line, yeah.
Because the interior line's better than the exterior line, and it's certainly better than the linebackers.
I think the weakness is linebackers. Again, looking at it static state, not looking at where they're coming and where they're going.
Yeah.
Joel is going to continue to get better. Willie Harvey is going to continue to learn how to play off of Joel, and they're going to get better chemistry together. It's going to be better. But right now, it's just that is the weakness of the defense, which is why when you're talking about being aggressive, one of the things that you can do to mute linebackers that aren't necessarily to mitigate a linebacker that doesn't necessarily know how to fit, tell them where to go. And if you're blitzing linebackers or blitzing somebody else, then you're forcing the time that they have to do something down. And if you say you're blitzing Joel, it's going to say you run through this gap and tackle the guy with the ball. Then it's a much easier read. It's a much simpler, less decision-making process. And that's why this aggressiveness allows the athletes that they have on the field. Because take Joel out of being, again, an improving but still not quite finished product at linebacker. The kid's a freak athlete. He's a freak athlete. So if you give that freak athlete one job that he feels confident in, then they're able to get 6 sacks like they did against Akron. I mean, when is the last time Iowa State had 6 sacks in a game?
I don't know.
A while ago. I think it was against Northern Iowa 4 years ago or something like that. And then after that,
so,
it was a long
but
time.
My point, Jeff, is that like Tongamoa, this bye week will be huge for him. And
Is Zakare or what?
Awazirike.
Awazirike. He's long. He's not quite thick.
I don't think I've told you this. Somebody in the Iowa State football coaching staff told me that he is the most talented player on the roster.
I believe it. He's just thin right now. For being the position he plays 3 technique.
Yeah, they didn't say he's going to have the best year of anybody. They said long term, we think he's the most talented player on the roster.
Because he's a freshman, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a redshirt freshman.
And so
he's phenomenal.
He's one of those guys where you walk by him, you go,
Gee.
But he reminds me almost of Montgomery, where you're talking about the contact with David Montgomery, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like Owazarike is he's the guy I was describing. Like, he's so good. Like, he doesn't really realize how to be efficient yet. And once he figures that out, it'll be like,
it's
going to
be dangerous. Yeah. Yeah. And you mix that with Lima, Tongamoa, and Leo.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, we've yet to see this line of what it could be, because Tongamoa really hasn't been into the mix. Mm-hmm. And then we haven't even mentioned Matt Leo yet.
I bet Owazarike ends up playing end by the end of, depending on where he's needed. If they can develop, like, Jamal Johnson, and if they can develop those guys in the interior, I think Owazarike. I mean, think about this for next year. What their defensive line is probably going to be is Owazarike on one side, Bailey and or Leo on the other side, and Lima and Tongamoa in the middle. That's your defensive line.
Yeah.
That's a damn Big 12 defensive line right there. That's 6'7", 6'7", at the end. And you've got Lima and Tongamoa in the middle, which are 330 apiece.
What's your analysis on Leo?
I think he doesn't understand football yet.
That's where I'm getting to.
He's a freak athlete. He just, in the same light, the difference with Joel and Leo is that Joel has played a lot of football, and he's played a position which necessitates you needing to know everything. When you play quarterback, you literally have to know what every front coverage is on the defense, as well as knowing all 11 responsibilities on offense. So you have to know what 22 dudes are doing when you play quarterback. Matt Leo played rugby. And so this is his third year of playing football. Wow. And when you played...
Isn't this what you would expect for a 25-year-old who's only played 2 years of football
in
his life?
But he's a monstrously freak athlete. And so giving that guy... He's going to need a little bit of time of just understanding, why is this guy on offense trying to do this thing to me, and what do I need to do to counter it? Because especially on defense, it's a reactionary... It's the reactionary unit. You can set the physicality, mm-hmm. but you can't set where everything is going. Because if you just played everything like you wanted to, and they throw a pass, you have to play that differently than run. So you've got to react to what they do. So he's learning a little bit more. But when you be able to just take the bridle off and just say run, pony, run, that kid's again at 6'7", the athlete that he is, and Owazarike at 6'6", 6'7", on his end. Those two have really high ceilings.
And Bailey, too.
And the thing with Jaquan Bailey, though, that bothers the hell out of me is that he is lazy as sin when it comes to fighting across reach blocks. That's why Iowa ran at number 19 every single time he was on the field in the second half.
He looks like, and again, novice football mind here, he looks like he's over-pursuing constantly.
He's under-pursuing, which
no,
is a problem.
But I'm talking about, like, when he gets out wide... Like, he can get sealed off. I wish that we had some video right here, because it would be a lot better for our podcast listeners. But he gets sealed off because it looks like he's getting out so far wide, Jeff, that then the run play can just go right to the inside of him, and that defense doesn't have a shot at it.
I think that's an overcorrection.
And I think that's why the underneath and the screen balls have been a problem as well.
I think it's an overcorrection from what he's been doing before, because being lazy is sin. As a defensive end, there's something – let's take this – a defensive end and say the contain player and kickoff do the same thing. And it's called – I think what Shane Burnham called it is setting a hard corner. Instead of setting a soft edge, you set a hard corner. So if you're playing defensive end, you want to say you are going to stop here. Regardless of if I tackle you or not, you're going to stop here. It's not letting the play stretch, and it's not getting inside of that point. So if you're walking in a hallway, I have to get to your level and stand exactly in a spot. Then at that point, you're either going to have to run underneath me and turn around, or you're going to have to bubble back behind me. What I can't do is, one, if we're walking in that same hallway, I can't stand with my back to the wall, AKA getting reached, because you can just go outside with no hesitation, mm-hmm. no interruption. You just keep walking. The other thing that I can't do is get to that same point in the hallway and then shuffle with you. So if you're walking and I just keep shuffling away from you, then there's no edge that you're setting at all. You're just kind of floating and expanding. So what he did last year and into the beginning part of this year was he got reached. He was, again, in this metaphor, standing against a wall. He was never setting a hard corner to say, this is where you stop. He was getting reach blocked. Now, this year, the counterpoint to that is his coach coaches were saying, get your ass outside.
Okay.
Get
outside. So he's doing what he's told then in that
But
sense.
He's doing it too far.
Okay.
So he's getting up to that level, and then he's floating with that play, and he's not setting a hard corner. It's a soft edge. So if you're setting a soft edge, you're not setting an edge at all. So what he's got to do is find a different point in that. He's got to find the middle point of he's got to get outside and then sink his ass down of saying, this is where you stop, and force everything back into the rest of the linebackers, linemen, secondary, whatever, and force everything back in. Bailey has to do a better job, but again, he's 19. He's a true sophomore, and I think he's a naturally hard-headed kid, so once he gets it, he's going to be like, oh, that's a lot easier, but getting through to him is a little bit of an issue. I'm excited for this, but there's a lot of things that need to be corrected, but like we were saying, the kids that we're talking about that are like, you need to improve are sophomore.
They're kids.
Sophomore.
Yeah.
Junior, redshirt freshman. Like, that's what we're talking about, and they're already really talented, but it's not that we need to improve this. It's they're really talented. They're doing a good job, but they need to be doing a great job. That's the exciting part.
You got to get going back to work. I just want to get one take real quickly on Texas. I wasn't surprised at all that they went and competed the way that they did with USC. I know Herman. You know mm-hmm. Herman. I think there's probably some Tom Herman fatigue here in Central Iowa, being how much attention he's gotten as mm-hmm. Texas's head coach. I think he's going to be great there.
I think so, too.
I think you do as well. I fully expect a really good Texas team to come in. In fact, I put them on my Big 12 power rankings for this week. I think I had them fifth at a 1-2 record. But I think right now, I mean, the way I look at power rankings, who's the best teams?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I could argue that they're fourth right now after what we saw at USC. So I think Iowa State can win the game. I think Texas is going to be a slight favorite. I don't think Vegas is going to be in love with mm-mm. the Longhorns in this one. I think it's a damn near a 50-50 shot that Iowa State could win the football game. But this is a different Texas team, I think, than the one we saw lose to Maryland in opening week.
But also, they are – I think USC is not as good as people think they are.
I would agree. They're very undisciplined. They're
yep.
exactly what you'd think from a talented USC
yep.
team.
And so they're really talented. I don't think they're as good as we think they are. It kind of reminds me, not to the same degree, but remember it was either this last year or the year before when Texas and Notre Dame played a classic, and they're like, oh, Notre Dame is
yeah.
back, and they
yeah.
end up losing 8 games that year.
Yeah.
It's a little early for me to say, yep, USC is really good. In the same light, Texas playing an average team really well doesn't make them a great team. There are still a significant
amount. I think USC is above average.
Yeah.
You have an elite quarterback. You've got talent all over the field.
Yeah, so? So did DeShone Kizer and Notre Dame, and they went 8-4. That's a good for USC's
hey,
average.
Okay.
For USC's
okay.
not average team in the country.
I picked
for
Washington
that
to win the for the life of me, I couldn't understand why Washington would be picked under USC.
They
Chris
lost
Peterson.
A bunch of first round NFL players.
I get it, but like
still
it's still Chris Peterson.
I think USC is the third best team in the Pac-12. I think Stanford and Washington
wow.
are both better.
Even though USC already beat Stanford?
Still.
Wow.
Still. But anyway, side note.
This is fake news.
Hashtag fake news. No, but I think that...
Okay, so your take on Texas.
Huh?
Your take on Texas.
My take on Texas.
I'm just leading you back to that because I interrupted you.
Is that there's a lot of talent, but there's still a lack of discipline. And that can't get corrected in 3 weeks or 6 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of guys that get hung up on the wrong thing. And a team like Iowa State, defensively might have a little bit of issue, but offensively, this team, Jacob Park, is every bit as good in delivering the ball to playmakers, maybe not every, but close to. One of the best, I would say one of the best in the conference, top 10% in the country.
Park's a better quarterback than whatever Texas is going to bring.
Right. And so being able to deliver the ball to every single corner of the field, if you are not sound, that is going to bite you in the ass. So Iowa State is going to be able to move the ball and score on Texas just like they did against Iowa, just like they did against Northern Iowa, just like they did against Akron. Will they score 40? I don't know. I'm not saying they won't. But Iowa State has talent across the board, which is, again, crazy to say. But think about what Iowa State teams, when we were still good, like the Jake Knott, AJ Klein years, against a team like Baylor, where, granted, we were slowing them down, but they were still scoring 28 a game. And that was a successful game, is you hold Baylor to 24. That's what Iowa State's offense feels like because they're able to do so many things all the way across the board. So I think Texas is good. I think they're improving. I think USC is not quite as good as what we thought. And they're going to have to – fight the, like, one of the expressions, especially in high school football, is the logo on the side of the helmet's worth a touchdown, or logo on the side of the helmet's worth 14 points. In the reverse of that, Texas might think the logo on their helmet's worth 7 points, because,
man, I just don't buy that with Texas and Iowa State anymore. But Iowa State's had so much success.
No, what I'm saying is,
no, I get
Texas,
what you're saying.
When Texas thinks that their shit doesn't stink,
all of a sudden, they
have to fly to Ames on a Thursday after competing with USC, and everyone's saying, you're back, you're up in these power rankings, you're good, Coach Herman's finally getting things right, you got a quarterback, you got a defense, you got an NFL talent all over the place. Then they think, it's Ames. Granted, they lost, they got beat to hell last time they came to Ames. It was 24-0. They're going to try and be reminded of that, but it's still Iowa State. It's still Texas. So if they come in with a general lack of discipline and a think of, yeah, we're going to be fine, Iowa State is way better than Texas is going to give them credit for. I don't think, again, I think you're right by saying it's a 50-50 shot, because the talent at Texas is still really good. But I don't think that this is going to be a game that any Iowa State fan should have any fear or reservation about at all.
In closing, I feel – so here's the difference. When you guys were on a roll there in like 2012, you know, 2011, 2012, I legitimately went into College Football Saturdays feeling like Iowa State could upset anybody.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. I don't necessarily feel like this team could upset anybody.
Just beat them.
But I feel like the culture around the program is where they don't give a crap if it's Oklahoma.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like the expectations are just so much higher than they have been.
And you know the like a closing metaphor for that? The quarterback at the end of the game giving an interview that said it's not good enough with a dip in his mouth. That's the ultimate.
I love it, man.
I don't give a shit what you think about me. I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
I love it. That's a perfect way to end it. Thank you. And I'm going to be hosting this on Tuesdays with you, hopefully starting next week, the CFTV Live.
I'm going to John Gruden, John Madden.
Yes.
The heck out of this thing.
And then I'm gonna ask a lot of questions. Like, I'm going to come loaded.
Spider through Y banana.
Oh. He's Jeff Woody. I'm Chris Williams. Thanks to AgriGold for sponsoring today's podcast. Hey, give us, please, when you guys rank us and put reviews on iTunes, it helps us. Please do that. We would also appreciate, you know how I pay guys like Jeff and Jay Jordan and Kevin Fitzpatrick? We use our Patreon money, and we that's how we're funding all these extra guys to come on and give you guys the best content on any Iowa State site in the world. So
and leave comments about how handsome Chris is.
Yeah, and that'd be phenomenal as well. So long, everybody.